Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly. Today, battle at the bridge. Terry shamed by former teammate and whoever gave him that haircut. But while JT's hand not shaken, Chelsea are after City's dramatic victory. Meantime, in other England defender misuse of tackle news, Ryan Shawcross's horror challenge leaves Arsenal with just Arf Ramsey. The pod says, get well soon, Aaron, and ask, are Arsenal truly back in the title race? And what of United, who take the Carling Cup? Is the only thing capable of stopping Wayne Rooney's amazing run of form a call-up for an England friendly? The pod reflects on all this and more, including your posts and tweets, the latest from Europe, the Bundesliga, Serie A, and eyes down as we play Sid Lowe Bingo. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Right, well, I think we're ready then for today's show. On board, we have Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. Nice to have you back again. Fresh from Stamford Bridge, Raphael Hoddigstein.
Hello.
And Barney Rone. Good to see you back, Barney.
Hi, James.
All right, I hope you've all brought something to the table. Literally, probably, in Barney's case, although we're not going to have any repeating of that sandwich thing from last...
Sandwich
game. I mean, it has been brought to my attention there was some disquiet about the fact that I seemed to be eating a sandwich during last week's podcast.
Right, your mother never mentioned anything about sandwich eating while talking, that kind of thing.
No, well, I don't know, it was quite a long time ago.
Perhaps. Yeah, all right, I'll move on then, eh? It's got a bit awkward here. No, Let's start with...
In my defence, the pod does take place over our lunchtime, and I'd got up about 6 o'clock in the morning, I was extremely hungry. I've been planning, actually, to just have one bite, just enough to stop me feeling dizzy, but at that point I seem to remember you threw directly to me from your intro.
Yeah, that, I am complicit in this. I think my feeling was that when I saw you produce the sandwich at the very
moment...
You
thought it was a challenge, didn't you?
I thought I wanted a highlight, almost. Mm. See how far you would take it.
The problem was it was a really nice sandwich, and so it was lying there, and I kept having more, and...
Excellent. I'll just move on then to Stamford Bridge. Raphael, as I say, you were there. What an extraordinary result. You wouldn't have expected this before the game, or even halfway through the game, would you?
No. City looked absolutely hopeless in the first half. Yes, they defended well afterwards. It looked like a master plan, like a Serie A tactical stroke of genius from Mancini, but they had nothing. They seemed to wait for the first Chelsea goal, and Chelsea themselves were going through the motions. They looked a bit tired. They looked a bit laboured. As they very often do at Stamford Bridge, but it just did enough, in my view, and most of the people watching the game, I think, at the time, to win this game quite comfortably. And it all turned on that incredible Tevez goal, which really should have never been scored for three or four reasons.
Right. John Terry being one of them.
Well, the back header was a disaster from John Obi Mikel. Terry was turned. Tevez had a lot to do. Really shouldn't have gone and got shot away. And then Hilario, he went down like a Bahnschrank, you say in German. Yeah. I don't know.
the English translation.
It's a railway.
A
sleeper.
No, I think he's talking about the barrier when
level crossing barrier.
Like a level crossing barrier.
That's right.
It's funny how Chelsea have suddenly looked, from being a couple of weeks ago, you know, the unstoppable force, they suddenly look a bit shaky.
That's true, although I think when Michael Essien comes back, I think that will firm things up
a little. That's what I was going to say as well. Compared to Mikel, I mean, he's such a forceful player in midfield, and I've not been that impressed by him. Mikel doesn't really seem to have come on much, does he?
It's been a strange season, though, hasn't it? Because every city, you know, Chelsea have looked so strong, so dominant for large periods. United, you know, lethargic. Arsenal have been pretty much out of it for two or three times, you know, over the course of the last 6 or 7 months. We're sort of playing these games of musical chairs again, where, you know, Chelsea are on the slide and Arsenal, which we'll come on to, and United are doing, you know, are both back in form. But I also think we've become used to, under Jose Mourinho and under Arsenal's Invincibles, and then more recently under Ferguson, becoming used to the dominant team, a super strong team. But we've had three teams at the moment that have their flaws, have their weaknesses, aren't as strong in depth as they were. And it's made for an enthralling season, to be honest.
Yeah, what a climax that awaits us. Raphael, you were saying last week how the writing might be on the wall for Mancini, and that writing might be exit above the door that he might be going through. I think that's clear. What kind of risks would he have faced had the game not turned for the better for City on Saturday? Do you think there was a real risk to it then?
Well, not on that maybe not on Saturday, because you can lose away to Chelsea. There's no that wouldn't have been a massive disappointment. I think the problem is more with Stoke and that these kind of results where they should win and don't. But you know, Mancini, to be fair to him, was afterwards very level-headed and said, you know, this wasn't our best performance. We played far better against Stoke, where we lost 3-1 on Wednesday night before. And I really felt that they were only 1 or 2 seconds away from falling apart in the first half after that Lampard goal. And it was just extraordinary how this game turned. Really, one of the weirdest 4-2 I think you'll ever see. The result hardly reflects what happened on the pitch.
Mm. What about afterwards then? You were saying there were cheers in the press room when Craig Bellamy came on Sky. All the misty-eyed hacks were throwing their hats in the air as he told it to Team Terry.
Yes, because you never hear these things from footballers anymore. You never hear any substance or anything remotely interesting or funny or true in that sense. And when a Sky commentator or moderator asks these questions, you always expect the players to say, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. But he actually gave an answer that stuck and that rang true and everybody was very happy.
And what was that answer?
Oh, the answer was he said everybody in football knows what John Terry is like.
Right.
Nothing surprises me about him, but that's off the pitch. On the pitch, he's a real consummate professional.
Right. He is, by all accounts, a man of voracious appetite. I think it's okay to say that, Sean Ingle. And he presumably was asked this question because while Wayne Bridge had passed Terry by without shaking his hand pre-game, I think that Bellamy had a little message for him, did he not, as they went
past? He certainly made a face, didn't he?
He looked away. He looked away as he shook his hand.
I think he maybe mouthed something.
And he looked away. He very visibly shook his hand but looked the other way.
Right.
It's quite unbelievable when Craig Bellamy can take the moral high ground over John Terry, which several of our posters have made.
But this is the thing about Bellamy, isn't it? He is a bit of a guilty pleasure in that every atom of your being may be repulsed by him on one level. He's still very interesting. You'd like to hear what he's got to say. You want to hear his loudmouth voice again because he does say things you don't expect to hear.
He picks his opponents as well, Barney.
Well, he's fallen out with, Souness,
Shearer.
Terry, he goes for the big guns.
And John Anariza's knees.
He doesn't, apart from John Anariza, he doesn't toe the party line. It's kind of fascinating, even though he's clearly kind of a horrible man as well.
You speak to people at Newcastle, and certainly some of the things, you know, that he said to Sir Bobby Robson, you know, God rest his soul, Bellamy isn't, you know, the nicest of sorts.
Really, this just in. On that whole Wayne Bridge thing, because, you know, we were caught a little bit on the hot by his announcement last week, but I think, you know, we were saddened that he felt in that position. Interesting, though, to read the opinion of Happy Goth's girlfriend, very much our go-to source on footballing matters. Happy Goth, anyway, posting and saying, I'd just like to throw in my girlfriend's take on the Bridge-Terry affair. But according to her, he's milking the incident to try and get her back, and it's all a big attention-seeking stunt, this renouncing the England team. Who his ex sleeps with has got nothing to do with him, says Happy Goth's girlfriend. The reason Bridge has announced his international retirement so close to the City-Chelsea match is to gain the biggest degree of media scrutiny possible so that it becomes impossible for his ex to avoid noticing what a brave and noble gesture Bridge has had to take because he's so upset about the thought of his ex being with another man. That's a fascinating take, I think.
Do Goths go out with other Goths? They do, don't they? They only mate with other Goths.
Is that so? Not sure.
So she's probably a Goth as well, and they tend to take a very negative view of things.
Right, okay. Now
that's my analysis.
Right, there you go. So Wayne Bridge, Happy Goth's girlfriend, seen through his charade. Anyway, I best move on. Hey, Chelsea's defeat means that the title race wide open again. Arsenal, well, they got a big victory at Stoke in what was a very, very important test for them if they are to have a real role to play in the title race. But, of course, it's the big thing about this game, Aaron Ramsey and his shattered leg. We've got a whole page worth of posts here from people, some saying, well, you know, this is the anti-Arsenal thing, people trying to kick Wenger's team around. Other people saying this is just English football, you don't see this kind of thing elsewhere. As long as British managers such as Alex McLeish and Tony Pulis exist, no British national team will ever lift a meaningful international trophy. You lack the skills to play the beautiful game. You lower the standards to pre-evolution levels. Well, Raphael.
Well, I wanted to say I only saw the tackle in question on Sunday night. But I knew before I'd seen it that A, it would be described as clumsy by Match of the Day pundits, and B, that somebody would say he's not that kind of player, Ryan Shawcross. And unfortunately, these are the sort of two default reactions to any leg-breaking scenario we see.
I didn't understand Pulis saying that at all after the game. How can he not be that kind of player if he's just committed that kind of tackle? And it's got nothing to do with it, what kind of person he is. Mm. We're talking about an incident on a football field. I didn't understand that defence at all.
The problem is that what happens is that people say, well, they take a charitable view and say, well, it was unintentional. He obviously did not try to break the leg intentionally, and that sort of absolves him of any guilt. But the truth of the matter is that you owe a duty of care to your fellow professional on the pitch, and you can't go into tackles recklessly, endangering his safety. That's why you're being sent off, for excessive force, for endangering another man's health.
As a Football Book of the Year shortlisted author, Raphael Honigstein, for a book about, you know, the English approach to the game, what do you make of this? Do you agree that this is a peculiarly English way of defending?
I think it's not. I really think it's no coincidence that you see these type of injuries in the Premier League, and you very hard push to see them in Germany or in Spain or in Italy. Yes, of course they happen. Accidents happen, but I think there is a culture here of turning a blind eye to these things. And as I just mentioned, in the way that it's being portrayed afterwards, it gives people like that a license to do it again. Because right. If it's unintentional and it's just clumsy, then what's the big deal?
Producer Ben just wants to point out that Ballack's challenge on Tevez was pretty criminal too, and he's a German.
Yeah, but he came from behind, he went through him, but there was no way that Tevez was really going to do any damage to himself. It was meant to hurt, and he did it very well, very efficiently, you might say.
It was a different kind of tackle as well. Shawcross's tackle was a statement tackle. It was excessively forceful, and it was
a reducer.
Yes, it was. Whereas Ballack was simply trying to stop the player.
But the tackle wasn't late. It wasn't high. It wasn't made when the ball was miles away. This wasn't Claudio Gentile or Vinnie Jones.
But it was excessively forceful. You don't need to use that much force to win
the other thing
ball.
I would say, though, people say that Shawcross isn't that type of player. He broke Franny Jeffers' ankle in 2007. At the time, the Stoke assistant manager Dave Kemp said, there's no way that was a malicious challenge. Ryan isn't that sort of player. To be fair, Jeffers was playing well at the time, and it was probably a new experience for Ryan to get frustrated. Maybe that's why he chased down the ball and made the tackle. Arsenal fans, many of them sent me a link showing Shawcross going through the back of Adebayor from last season as well. I don't know. I thought it was a bad tackle, but I didn't think it was the worst tackle in the world. TM, which
not even the worst
pundits.
Tackle this weekend, probably.
Probably not.
I saw a worst tackle. At St Andrews by Liam Ridgewell on James McCarthy and the linesman. Mm. And McCarthy now, I think, is out of the Republic of Ireland squad, having had his first call up. He'd been giving Ridgewell a bit of a hard time. He's a very skillful player, and it was malicious. But luckily, he jumped out of the way. Could easily have broken his leg, but nobody said anything about it.
Well, you mentioned St Andrews, and of course, that was the dramatic scene for Eduardo's similar injury a couple of years ago, and not surprisingly, Arsene Wenger raising the notion that this is not entirely coincidence that when you add in Diaby as well, there does seem to be a policy.
It's not a coincidence.
It's not.
Because Arsenal keep the ball in midfield more than any other English team.
But they were the team who used to kick the opposition up in the air.
Well, that's changed, though. If you go to Sunderland, Birmingham or Stoke, you're playing against teams who are not used. They only play against Arsenal, who keep the ball like that. They don't play in Europe. And in the English game, there's a 50-year culture of trying to overcome deficiencies in technique with excessive will and physical force. And it's just going to happen in the end. Your players are going to have these injuries.
I certainly think that's true. However, Arsenal are only the fourth most foul team in the Premier League this season.
Well, we're talking
behind
about
Spurs,
kind of fouls,
Hull
not
and Everton.
Stats. We're not talking about pushing Kevin Davis when he's challenging for a high ball. Like, these are the kind of fouls that happen to them more than other teams because of the way they play. There's no doubt about that.
Hmm. We've had some people, including Matt Scott here on the pod before, positing the notion that the Eduardo injury really scuppered Arsenal's title chances, not just that year, but then ever after, because they were so shaken. And it was interesting to note Daniel McMurray posting to this effect that with, say, Fabregas as the captain, rather than Gallas 2 years ago, the team seemed to rally and remain united and focused in a very different way. And how will this affect, do you think?
Well, last time around they drew 2-2 against Birmingham during that game. Then they drew the next three games against winnable opposition and ended up, you know, finishing, you know,
behind United and Chelsea, I think. This time around, they have quite an easy run. The next five games are all winnable, as I mentioned on Thursday. Hopefully, it won't affect their season and they can make a real go of it.
The interesting thing for me is that I remember Arsene Wenger, after the Aston Villa win at home just after Christmas, saying that it's a really competitive league up until March. Because what he said is, after March, there are a lot of teams in it who are effectively not playing for anything anymore. And then it comes very random. And I'm just wondering whether these winnable, you know, and easy games, in inverted commas, that we talk about, are actually a lot more difficult than games against Blackburn or Fulham, teams who've got nothing to play for and will probably spend half of the week in Mallorca on some jolly before the game.
Very interesting point, very interesting point. Well, that's probably enough for part one, I'm thinking. And yet there's still so much to discuss, like the Carling Cup.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with sportingbet.com.
Right, OK, part 1B, drama at Wembley, as United take, what is it, the 34th title of Sir Alex Ferguson's reign. A lot of controversy over the decision not to send Vidic off or give him a yellow card or whatever. Paulson tweeting in, does Phil Dowd get a winner's medal for helping United? A little bit bitter there, Paulson, a little bit bitter. But probably a fair result in the end, no?
Well, only if you take the view that I mean, Phil Dowd basically bottled it. It was very early on. It was a clear red card. Even Sir Alex Ferguson said, we got a lucky break. He could have been sent off.
Right.
But Phil Dowd didn't make that decision. And after that, you know, you're absolutely right. United did deserve to win the game.
Mm.
But Rooney would have been a hell of a lot harder against 10 men.
Well, that's true.
And being 1-0 down.
Or against 11 with...
I mean, I often moan about video replays, but you didn't need to have a video replay to see that was a red card.
Mm. I don't know. I'm not convinced. I think you might make the case in defence of Phil Dowd by saying that by the time he actually did break him down, did bring him down, it was no longer a clear scoring
but
opportunity.
But that's because Vidic had grabbed the bloke's arm.
But that wasn't the foul. The foul came later.
No, that wasn't
what he was penalised for.
Exactly,
foul happened while Everett was quite close to him.
Yeah.
I think it was a yellow card and he may then have been sent off later. But not to give him a card at all was insane. I mean,
Wayne Rooney there with his eighth header in his last nine goals... and a lot of people saying, wow, he's suddenly got really good at
heading.
He's
got Valencia on the right wing.
Right. Instead of Cristiano Ronaldo.
And he's no longer stuck out on the left.
Exactly.
Which helps.
Right. So it's all about his new position and the fact that he's got a crossing winger there.
Yeah, he seems to have just enough pace and just enough quality delivery to. I mean, he got very frustrated with Nani for a while, didn't he, Rooney? I mean, you could see that in games because he'd beat three men and then not quite.
Yeah, first half against Milan, I think he was ready to throttle him.
Mm.
Mm. It's probably worth pointing out that Valencia was up against Stephen Warnock, who's many people's favourite to be England left back, and Warnock had a shocking game. I mean, it was a really stodgy pitch. It was probably a pitch that was stodgier than one of your spotted dicks you used to have at your boarding school, Jimbo, and yet Valencia just danced around him time and time again.
As stodgy as that?
More so, I'm saying.
Right, okay. Rooney, though, turns out he's carrying an injury.
Well, he's got a knee problem, although he is, as we speak, he's due to, there's an England press conference due.
Right.
So if he's appearing at that, you'd imagine he will be fit for the England v Egypt game.
Oh, okay. Oh, there you go. What about Villa, though? Bad results, as we all know, can be contagious. So will this defeat, do you think, have any impact on their race for fourth?
No, I don't think so. I think they got to a cup final. They played quite well. They lost to Man United. And they could be back at Wembley again later in the season. I think it's good for them. I kind of wish they'd won the Carling Cup because I like to see teams from outside the Big Four winning things. But I think they did okay. The problem they have is they don't have a top-class striker.
Yeah.
Very good midfield, decent defence when they're not making terrible mistakes. But, you know, Man United have got Rooney and Owen, and that was the difference.
Very good point. Among the other contenders for that final Champions League space, of course, Liverpool won. Reina had a very impressive performance there for them against Blackburn, and lots of love between Sam Allardyce and Rafa Benitez.
There's a sort of childish spat going on.
Mm.
But it's quite funny.
It is quite fun, isn't it?
Slightly undignified in victory to kind of mock the team you've just beaten.
Yes.
But he was responding to Allardyce criticising Liverpool's own style, so
yeah.
I guess it was fair.
And also, Allardyce made the somewhat obvious point that the referee might have been swayed by Anfield and the voice in the stadium, and he sort of said, well, they're very good here at getting decisions, and we've been adjudged to have committed 25 fouls and Liverpool only 10, and that's completely against the run of play, and as if some sort of great miscarriage of justice had just appeared, had just happened, and it was all a bit half. Can I say that half-assed?
No, don't say half-assed. Not on the pod, please. Roger Palmer. Go on.
Didn't Allardyce gang up with Ferguson?
Yeah, he did last year with the DVD and all that nonsense.
He's part of the Northwest mafia of managers. Him and Fergie and one or two others. They were sort of very tight knit.
It's very lame, isn't it? It's enough to make you feel sympathy for Benitez when you.
I do. Not quite enough.
No, he's a lovely show. Spurs, though, they're back in fourth place. We said this was a big test of their ambitions, and boy, did they pass it. Although, of course, Everton almost equalised at the death.
Spurs were very good in the first half. Tom Huddleston impressed me, the way he sort of knit things together. Second half, as you say, Everton took control, and they really should have scored.
How big a miss was that?
Donovan, from about 2 yards out, slotted it wide, and I'd backed the draw as well, and I want to punch that TV, but I'm too polite.
Right, you're a lover, not a fighter, Sean, as well. So.
Yeah. Not much of either, but...
Right. Hey, Spurs, you know, and Palachenko.
Absolutely. There was a stat from Opta, which I know...
Harry must be delighted, no?
Absolutely. We shouldn't read too many stats out, but he played 82 minutes yesterday, which is more than he'd spent in the league prior to that match.
So in that one game, he's already more than doubled his amount of...
Redknapp's just lucked out with him, hasn't he? I mean, he treated him badly, didn't give him any particular, you know, role in his team, and he's very lucky that it turns out.
I think you'll find he's man managed him brilliant.
Maybe it's just brilliant man management. It turned out luckily he's still a very good finisher and will score goals.
Right. Now, time to turn our attention to the continent. First up, it's La Liga with Dr. Sidlow in Madrid. Many listeners are suggesting a round of Sidlow bingo, in fact, and we've prepared cards actually. The winner will be the one that gets all the Sidlow classic trademarks in the upcoming discussion. I've got there is a slight feeling. Hang on a minute. And on the one hand, Sean, what are you looking for?
Well, I've also got on the one hand, and there is a slight feeling, but I've also got rubbish in there
right.
as well.
Okay.
I've got hang on a minute and the barking dog.
Right. But you should have another one as well.
And caveat.
And caveat.
I've got caveat too.
Oh, you lucky chaps. Right. And what else you got?
I've got barking and on the one hand.
Oh, right then. Okay. Probably missed out some listeners, but here we go. Dr. Sidlow in Madrid.
Hello.
Ah, Sid. How are
you?
Hello. Hello, Sid.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you, yeah.
That's excellent news. Sid, at the top of the table, Barcelona had Messi to thank for getting a vital victory after a bit of a scare from Malaga.
Yeah, it was a bit of a scare, although it's a weird one, because Barcelona certainly did have a scare, and they spent the whole game trying to find the way through and kind of basically battering up against the side of the Malaga defence, who defended very, very deep, and I thought as well, very well indeed. Then after, I think it was about 70 minutes or so, Pedro finally finds a way through, a really, really good shot from about 20 yards. You know, Barcelona tried to play this brilliant, pretty football way through, trying to walk the ball in, and eventually they get it with a 20-yard screamer. Then Malaga only go and score. 10 minutes to go, Barcelona won, Malaga won.
So was the
defense kind of really up against it. And they score a really unbelievably good goal, Barcelona, involving Messi, Alves and Xavi Hernandez. A brilliant pass from Xavi for Alves. And Barcelona win the game 2-1, and there's lots of talk about the fact that they really struggled to do so. But I have to say, I think it's the best they've played for 4 or 5 weeks. And I don't think it's coincidence that they've done so with the return of Dani Alves to the side. But then, of course, I'm biased because I have a thing about Alves, as everyone knows.
Is Guardiola basically saying to critics, hang on a minute, we are doing fine?
He's saying more than that. I think he's saying, hang on a minute, you've been saying badly, but there's a caveat to this. And I think it's important that you realise we're not rubbish after all. I don't think he's so much saying we're playing fine as I think he's saying that the blip, which was certainly there, and I think, you know, with players being injured and players being not fully fit and not looking sharp, maybe they've slightly overcome that. But of course, I think Guardiola, as much as anyone else, would admit that this is just one game.
All right, a huge result for Real Madrid in the Canaries, 5-1 there, another brace for Higuain.
Yeah, and what I love about this is that the morning of the game, Marca, the front cover of Marca, obviously the best-selling newspaper in Spain and very, very pro-Real Madrid, had a picture of Cristiano Ronaldo, and it said the objective, Pichichi, which is obviously the top scorers award in Spain. Now, I read that cover on Saturday morning and thought, objective Pichichi Cristiano Ronaldo, but hang on a minute, Higuain's already got two goals more than him. Then during the course of the game, Higuain gets two more. Cristiano Ronaldo did get one, but Higuain now has got 16 goals this season, just one behind Villa and Messi, three ahead of Cristiano Ronaldo. But nobody wants to talk about Higuain because he hasn't got the glamour, he hasn't got the style maybe of other players, and just as importantly, he's not a thing made by the current president. And I think that's really counting against him, but he keeps on scoring goals and he's playing very well indeed. And I just think the debate that still surrounds him from certain parts of the press is just complete bollocks, basically.
Random tangent here. How's the dog?
The dog's very well, thank you.
Is that
a link from Gonzalo Higuain to the dog? She's asleep, so by my feet.
Right. France are going to be hosting the Spanish national team this week, Sid. Any exciting call-ups?
None at all. Well, there is and there isn't. And by which I mean that 23 men obviously have been called up, the 23 men that virtually everybody expected, and the 23 men that almost certainly will be going to the World Cup. And obviously from an English point of view, it makes you so jealous watching the Spanish national team because they've got so many good players in every position. There's so much stability around the squad now. They're very clear about how they're approaching every game. They just have fantastic players throughout the squad. There's no debates about anybody anymore. And it just looks so good going into World Cup. Obviously, the question mark is what happens with injuries and so on, but you only have to look at the goalkeepers that Spain won't take and then the goalkeepers that England will, and you think, oh,
but Sid, do you think it's always a good thing to have so much...
Will you stop interrupting Sid, Barney?
Do you think it's a good thing to have so much stability? I mean, on one hand, that's a good thing, but do you think there's another view to that?
Well, there is a question mark, obviously, I suppose, and certainly I guess you look back on England's performances at World Cups, but not just England's, but other countries as well, that normally there is a player that comes out of nowhere and takes everyone by surprise. And so in that sense, you could say, well, maybe it would be nice if Spain had a bit of a wild card. But I think there is one potential wild card, because while everyone in Spain knows about him, and while there's a degree of stability about him, I think outside of Spain, there hasn't been that much said yet about Jesus Navas. And I think he's only going to make his third, maybe fourth appearance against France this week. And if he plays and plays well, then I think he could be the player that at the World Cup everyone goes, bloody hell, where did this kid come from?
Brilliant, Sid. All right, listen, thank you very much for that indeed. And we'll be catching up with you, I hope, on Thursday?
Yeah, hope so. Cheers, bye-bye.
Well, that was a bit of a disappointment, wasn't it? I got one. Sean?
I think I had the one as well.
Raphael, you got two in one sentence as well. And Barney?
Just caveat.
Just caveat. Blessed. Energy Tutorial says, I've heard literally nothing about David Silva recently and Valencia. Do read Sid's column, which is on Valencia, topically enough. And that's up, now?
It is. You can go to guardian.co.uk/football. And Sid is talking about the big Atletico Madrid v Valencia game.
Crazy game. You can also read Barney Rone's 5 Things I Discovered This Weekend and The Fiver and all sorts of other delights. Raphael Honigstein, you might have a little column up there as well. Not a little column, but you know what I'm saying. You might, yes.
Deceptively large column.
Yeah.
But when I sub it, I can tend to chop it down.
Do you now? Okay. Right. Okay. What will you be talking about? Tell us a little bit about the Bundesliga.
Well, the big story of the weekend is Bayern. After 57 rounds of games, 652 days and 14 months, they're back in number one spot where they belong, according to their own worldview, of course.
Right.
And they finally wrestled that top spot from Leverkusen this season. And there is a sense that now they are unstoppable. Who can shift them, etc., etc. They beat Hamburg, who put in a really good performance on Sunday in the Allianz Arena, 1-0, thanks to a fantastic Ribéry goal. A solo effort, out of nowhere, picked up the ball, left one man standing, cut inside and just smashed it in. Typical piece of magic that sort of decides a game that otherwise had 0-0 written all over it. And Leverkusen only could draw 0-0 against a very negative Cologne side to give Bayern that opportunity, and they took it.
Excellent.
The other big news, I guess, before I quickly say a word or two about the upcoming friendly against Argentina on Wednesday, is that Schalke beat Dortmund 2-1. This is obviously the biggest grudge match in German football, the two neighbours in the Ruhr area. And there was a very unfortunate coming together between Mats Hummels, the Dortmund defender, and the fist of Roman Weidenfeller, the Dortmund keeper. He broke Mats Hummels' jaw. He'll be out for 6 weeks. And Kevin Kurani had just slyly pushed Hummels into the path of Roman Weidenfeller's fist. When these sad images were presented to Felix Magath,
he's not
Schalke,
that kind of player, is he?
He isn't that kind of player, Kevin Kurani. He is usually more of a pushover.
Right.
But no, when these scenes were presented to Felix Magath, he was absolutely incensed. He said, "We won this big game and all you show me are fouls of my team. What is this? Schalke has many fans, but obviously no lobby in the media." And he stormed out mid-interview, later apologised for it, but those were the big talking points.
All right. Well, you mentioned the big midweek international, which is Germany-Argentina. And any exciting news vis-a-vis the squad there? Or?
Yeah, there's a couple of really exciting, if not totally totally surprising, calls up for Toni Kroos of Leverkusen. He's a Bayern player on loan. Leverkusen's
super,
really been...
Super Kroos, isn't it? Super Toni.
No.
Toni Kroos, they call him.
That's his name, yes. Yeah. Toni Kroos. Toni.
Jeff, have you ever seen him play, Jimbo? Yes, I have. He was big news last season when he was... He's only about 17, 18 now,
he's
he?
19 now.
Was he? Yeah. All right, it may have been 2 years ago. And everyone was going crazy about him. I saw some YouTube footage.
Toni Kroos is... having a fantastic season at Leverkusen. Right. He is nailed on to make the World Cup.
Right.
Is he the saver of German football? I'm not sure. Maybe after Easter we'll know more. But no, honestly, he's a very good player. And his call-up was fully expected. He deserves to be there, as is Thomas Müller, who is the new hot thing on Bayern's books. He's a player who came through the youth ranks, having a fantastic season, scoring a lot of goals, very versatile. And I think he'll feature. And, of course, with Ballack having softened up Carlos Tevez already on Saturday, it could be an interesting game.
Certainly could. And what news on Jogi Löw and that whole business with Oliver Bierhoff and how the kind of political infighting within...
There are no news. I mean, Löw is still very much talking about the possibility of resigning after the World Cup.
Because his contract ends midway through the World Cup.
On the 30th of June, before the quarterfinals. I mean, he says that he will, of course, stay on as long as the World Cup continues, if Germany lasts that long. But there is a sense, I think, that there won't be a happy future after that for Löw and Bierhoff at the German FA. The German FA would still like to keep him, but he's been sending out very mixed messages. And that's why this game all of a sudden is very, very important. Because, you know, a bad result at home to Argentina and you'll have 3 months of constant speculation. Some people even said maybe you should resign right now to get somebody in who is not a lame duck.
But the problem isn't Löw, it's Oliver Bierhoff, yeah? They want to get rid of him, stage a kind of Bierhoff putsch.
There was a feeling that there is a coup being staged by Bierhoff, that they wanted to take over the German national team, take it outside the jurisdiction of the German FA and sort of make it almost like a club, a separate entity that Bierhoff and Löw could then form and take control of for the future. And of course the German FA said no to that. And they're still trying to get rid of Bierhoff, but so far Löw has said it's either with Oli or no one.
Posts. Oh, the Football Ramble tweeting in saying, when are you going to play us in a game of five-a-side? Sean, do we have a five-a-side team?
We don't.
We play zero-gravity jetpack football, of course, here in Podland. But
I see Barney Rene as the enforcer.
Yeah, can we get you off international duty to turn out for...
Yeah, I'm sure I can speak to the manager and we can work something out.
All right, then. Raphael, I know you'll be involved.
Sure.
Good. Il Chino would like to say RIP. Chester City. Hope the pod gives this story some coverage instead of the usual Portsmouth stuff. The club was destroyed by Stephen Vaughan. Did I say that? Well, yes, anyway. But at least the Chester fans can start again with the Phoenix Club. Well, there's a silver lining for you. Sporting JE1972 says, Football Weekly merchandise. An egg cup would be good. The cup itself could have an image of Jimbo up to his eyebrows, and the egg itself could represent his head from there on upwards. You could smash his head in for breakfast. There's an idea for you. And Happy Goth says, Wayne Bridges' international retirement raises an interesting, if speculative, question for historians of English international football to ponder, which is, if Terry Butcher had slept with a former lover of Tony De Rigo, would England still have managed to make the semi-finals at Italia 90? My guess is they would.
Why is this turned into a happy goth show, isn't it? We had him on earlier with his girlfriend.
No, that was his girlfriend. The England squad, actually, not featuring Wayne Bridge, and a bit of a reinvention there by Capello, as we were previewing on Thursday. And yes, indeed, Shawcross has been called up, and Baines, and Warnock. And what a change for Capello. You know, last time England came together, they were being bigged up as world beaters, and now it's crisis this and Terry that. And Barney, were you making the interesting point, I think you were, that when you look down the squad, it's all people from the lower end of the table, isn't it?
Well, the clubs where more English players tend to...
Well, yeah, but it's funny. There's only one player from Liverpool. There's only two from Manchester United. You've got Portsmouth, you've got Stoke, West Ham. It's just curious. These are people who are used to relegation battles, well, and they're going to be there at the World Cup, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, Shawcross is an interesting case because he's obviously a young player. He wasn't going to get in the Man United first team. They still have an option to buy him back. And he's a very good defender. He deserves to play international football. Forget about the tackle. And he won't disgrace himself at all in that squad. But I think it's the lot of being a talented young English player these days.
There is a worry, of course, for Capello that without any international experience... coming up to that next level will be difficult. I mean, I don't think the World Cup is at the same level as the Champions League in terms of the quality of the games. But still, if you've never played in Europe or you've only played a handful of opponents, I think it would be difficult.
Mm. All right. Well, the game is against Egypt. That's a tough game, isn't it, Sean Ingle?
Well, it depends whether Egypt turn up and really go for it. But
African possible. Champions. All right. Well, of course, the squad is still subject to revision. One or two late changes likely after yesterday's action. I think there's an announcement due on that later on. That just leaves Raphael Honigstein before we sign off for today's show. Serie A.
We can leave it for today, shall
no,
we?
No, not when there's so many questions to be... let's see, should we do a 30-second roundup of Serie A?
10 seconds?
No, give me a minute.
Right, I'm off.
The big smile spreading all over Rafa's face. If you're leaving us now, many thanks for joining us. We'll be back on Thursday for the select few who choose to stick it out to the end. The
Hello,
good
Mum.
News is that there were 33 goals scored this weekend. Title race, Inter, who've had a really tough time of late. They had that game against Sampdoria with just nine players. Then they had to face Chelsea. Then they went away to Udinese with four of their starting lineup sent off. Mourinho was in the stands after making that handcuff gesture for the next three games.
Was he in the stands or was he being smuggled in?
No, he was up in the stands. He was telling the crowd to shush and he was very visibly up there. And a bit of bravado from the Portuguese because he away to Udinese, as I say, with all sorts of players out, he went with three strikers up front with Schneider in behind them. So very attacking lineup. They went a goal down early. Great goal from Pepe, an even better equaliser from Balotelli. Fantastic, just such a classy goal. It was almost nonchalant the way he stroked this shot in. Well worth checking this game out on YouTube, actually, because then Maicon's goal for the go-ahead goal, the 2-1, was absolutely blinding volleys. He raced into the area and met this ball from Pandev, first touch, and bosh, in it went. Fantastic. Anyway, all very exciting. They remain 4 points clear of Milan, who won. Ronaldinho was in brilliant form. Big injury worries, though, over Pato, who pulled up in the 75th minute, holding his thigh. And question marks over whether he is going to be able to face Manchester United in the Champions League clash next week. Is that? Yeah.
We should also talk about Juventus, who were awful against Palermo last
night. We should do. Next weekend, Roma and Milan face each other at Stadio Olimpico. In Rome, who are having a rotten run of results at the moment, they got knocked out of Europe by Panathinaikos. They got held 2-2 in Naples after being 2-2 up. But as you say, Juve lost 2-0 at home to Palermo. A brilliant Micheli goal here. Mark Jefford tweeting and saying, Jimbo, simple question, why are Juventus so bad? Well, it's a long story, isn't it? I think we've got time, though, Rafael, haven't we? It all goes back to... No, I mean, it's a long story. They've had a lot of injuries at crucial time, and a lot of injuries. They also have had ready-made excuses hanging around, like the manager who didn't really have a strong enough hold over the players, the directors who don't really know what they're doing, and they've now tried to kind of rectify that situation by bringing in some proper footballing people. But this is a team which just doesn't have enough quality players in the squad. And,
Diego hasn't been the player that I think Juve fans hoped he would be.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a bizarre situation. He reacted badly to being subbed in the Europa League on Thursday. And as a result, this weekend, Sunday night, they're losing 2-0, 89th minute, Zaccheroni, the manager, decides to take Diego off and put on a defender. I mean, it was clearly a very disciplinary move, that, and not one that's guaranteed to, you know, inspire any great love from the Brazilians.
In the 89th minute, he took him off.
Yeah.
Why is that a disciplinary move?
Well, there was no reason for taking an attacking
player
off.
You won't play that last minute. That'll show you.
I think it was a kind of a public shaming, okay? You don't like being taken off? I will take you off when I want. There was no way it was going to serve Juve's prospects.
People are very touchy in Serie A, aren't they? He's taken off with 1 minute to go, and he's upset about it.
Well, yeah, they were losing 2-0. Why take him off?
Because they're losing.
Maybe they're losing. Save him for... No? He was upset.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Leave it.
I should have left, really.
Yeah, yeah. What did you say?
I should have left, really.
You should have left. Anyway, well, there you go. Fulham, of course, facing Juventus. Is that any better for you, Rafa? A bit more relevant for you?
It's a big game.
All right, it is a big game. And, you know, Fulham are probably going to like their prospects because after this flurry of decent results, after Zaccheroni took over, it looks like they're back to the bad old ways, and the fans were once again lighting bonfires in stands at the Stadio Olimpico these days. Also... No, that's it for today then. I say, listener, yeah, time to get off. You've missed your stop. That's it for today, and we'll be back with more on Thursday. We'll be previewing the weekend's action and, you know, probably looking back on one or two of the midweek results and that. Do join us for Football Weekly Extra then. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Barney Rone.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, producer Ben, Raphael Honigstein and Sean Ingle. Speak to you on Thursday.
Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.